What's one of the number one complaints people have about our industry in working with people and staffing? It's the ghosting.
They don't hear back. Exactly. Right?
They never hear back. Would you rather hear something, even if it's from a digital recruiter, right? Would you rather hear something and move along in the process than hear nothing?
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby. Today, we're joined by Betsy Robinson.
Are you going to get up every single day and be better than you were the next day? And are you going to take action to do the tough things or to have the hard conversations or to go the extra mile to bring your team along, or are you not?
Betsy is the founder and CEO of Tier 4 Group, a woman-owned, diversity-certified talent acquisition firm headquartered in Atlanta, Georgia.
This is our 10th year in business at Tier 4, but it's my 14th year in business as an entrepreneur. So by that point, I knew I could make it or, you know, give it another go. And luckily and fortunately, I haven't had to look back.
The company specializes in connecting exceptional talent with top-tier employees for technology and executive roles. They combine advanced recruitment automation with a personalized approach.
How many of us already feel like our head spins every day hearing about AI and ChatGPT and the next thing and how we can incorporate those things into our business? And we hear it from our customers, right? You can either be on the forefront, or if you don't start tomorrow, you're already left behind.
Under Betsy's leadership, Tier 4 Group has achieved remarkable recognition. They've had 6 consecutive years on the Inc. 5000 list of the fastest growing companies and 5 appearances on the Atlanta Pacesetters list.
When's the last time that you actually sat down with a client and said, give me 2 things that we're doing really well, but give me 2 things that we're not doing well that we can improve on? Give me 2 things that your other vendors across staffing services otherwise that you really love about working with them.
Betsy is a graduate of the University of Georgia and a 4-time Bulldog 100 honoree. Betsy has garnered numerous accolades, including LGBTQ Business Person of the Year Georgia, Inc. Magazine's 30 Under 30-ish, and Atlanta Business Chronicle's 40 Under 40.
We welcome all ideas. It doesn't matter if you are someone who's been on our team for 1 week or someone who's been on our team for 1 year, or you've been our first employee who's been here 10 years. Everybody brings unique and different perspectives.
In addition to her leadership at Tier 4 Group, Betsy is also on the board of directors for Women in Technology. When not leading Tier 4 Group, Betsy cherishes her role as a wife, mom, loves cheering on her son at soccer games, and supporting her beloved Georgia Bulldogs. I first worked with Betsy in 2017, and I've been closely following her success ever since. Betsy, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Mark. And I'm so glad to reconnect and get some time with you today.
Me too. I was gutted to miss you in Atlanta. We were there in October and we did some in-person podcast filming, but I guess you were out of town that week. So I'm glad we're finally doing it this way, at least. And I'd love to meet you in person sometime.
I know. I hated to miss that. And next time you guys are stateside, I will be there. Or I'll hop over the pond too. You're worth
all right. I will take you up on that. That's awesome. So we actually have another connection that you're not aware of. My nephew serves with 101st Airborne, which I believe is a division you have a family connection to.
I do. So my stepfather, who raised me, since passed away in 2020, was a lieutenant colonel in the Army and served in the Airborne Division, and was in both Vietnam and Korea. So I did not know about that connection, but very grateful for everyone who has bravely served our country and fought for the U.S.
Absolutely. So I'd love to, let's start at the beginning, Betsy. I think you got into recruiting straight out of college. Could you share that story?
Yeah. So I, like most, did not go to school to be in the technology industry, the technology recruiting industry. I had a general business degree in marketing and management from the University of Georgia, and honestly thought I would move to Washington, D.C. and do something with international business. And spent a good bit of time in Germany, was a German minor as well in school. So this was not the path I saw myself taking, but some friends moved to Atlanta. They all had jobs before I did. I was a December grad, so not as many opportunities when you graduate in December as when you take the traditional path in the spring. But I met some folks from Apex and Tech Systems and some of the bigger guys in our industry at a career fair, and interviewed at several and had multiple offers, and chose a path right out of college at Apex Systems. And that's where I started my journey, and was on a plane and headed up to Virginia for training before I knew it. And then became one of the top 10 recruiters in the US in just a few months there. So
wow.
I fell in love with the industry, and this is now my 20th year in the industry, and I can't imagine doing anything else.
Happy 20th anniversary in recruiting. That's quite
Thank
a
you.
Milestone. Incredible.
Survival story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So straight out of college, joined a national large tech staffing company, and became one of the top 10 recruiters in your first year. That's incredible. How did you pull that off?
You know, I look back, and I think there were some amazing people I learned from. I hustled really hard and was kind of a sponge. I was really curious. So I sat in on a lot of other meetings and listened to people in the pit, you know, in those days, and started emulating, you know, their styles. Worked way more than 40 hours, as we often do in this industry. So I kind of just attribute it to that. And what I've found about myself, Mark, over 20 years, and apparently a teacher of mine told this to my mother. She was a school principal, so this was a teacher at her school that I attended. Apparently told her back then that I was a connector. I was connecting people from different walks of, you know, camps and things we would go do with other districts, and I would keep in touch with them. So by the time I was in high school and I was doing soccer, or whether it was, I also was in the band. So whatever it was, I was going to these things nationally and statewide, and would know all these kids. And so apparently that teacher told my mom, like, wow, of all my students and all my years so far, like, Betsy just seems to connect with everybody. And my mom didn't tell me that story until maybe my early 20s, after I'd been in recruiting a while. And I was like, ah, this makes sense.
It does make sense, doesn't it?
It makes sense. It was a light bulb moment. But that's really how I view myself. And it's not just in my job. It's in my personal life. My brain is always thinking, like, when we have a conversation of, oh, well, Mark should meet this person, and this is connected here. And I think that's what's made me an effective, you know, recruiter, and then, you know, salesperson and business owner.
Amazing. So at what stage did you decide that you were going to venture out on your own?
Yeah. So I had a first venture because a former colleague of mine started a company, and they were in the accounting finance space, and they wanted a technology division. And at the time, I was working for about a $200 million company at the time. And it was the financial crisis in 2009. No one in our industry was doing well. And here I was supporting some accounts that were undergoing some really big transformations. And so I'm like, I'm great. Like, sorry for everyone else. Like, I'm great. But he was very persuasive and said, you know, look, at the end of the day, if it doesn't work, if betting on yourself and betting on, you know, us as people that you know and you've worked with doesn't work, go back to work for, you know, the big guys, and you know, someone will hire you back. And I was like, yeah, they will. So that company, we grew also to the Inc. 5000 pretty quickly. There were some personal challenges outside of my control for one of the owners, and the company was dissolved, disbanded. But what I did was continue on with my client base and with my network that I had, you know, grown, and officially started Robinson Key at the time when you worked with me, and now rebranded to Tier 4 Group as our trade name in 2014. So this is our 10th year in business at Tier 4, but it's my what would that be, 14th year in business as an entrepreneur. So by that point, I knew I could make it or, you know, give it another go. And luckily and fortunately, I haven't had to look back. It's just been a journey of betting on myself and surrounding myself with good people and people I trusted and knew, but also have made some mistakes and, you know, learned a lot of lessons, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But
definitely.
Yeah. So it was a call from a friend and a former coworker that started that journey.
Amazing. So Tier 4 Group is 10 years old now?
10 years old.
Wow. And how many people have you got approximately in the various companies that make up Tier 4?
Yep. So in total, our internal group is approaching 30 right now. And then, billable consultants, we do a mix of contract to hire and executive search direct hire. But we are approaching about 180 consultants in the field.
Wow.
And looking to increase that pretty significantly next year as well.
Awesome. I love that. So looking back over the last 10 years then, what have been the highlights, Betsy? And like, talk me through some of the high points and then we can, you know, talk about some of the challenges as well.
Yeah. High points are, hiring my very first employee at the end of my first year when I didn't know, was this just going to be a lifestyle business? It'd just be me. And when you and I first connected in 2017 and I got great guidance and coaching from you, that was really the pivotal point we were in. Was I had hired a few people, I'd hired a salesperson, but our growth was really driven by the fact that our clients were growing and demanding more of us. Not that we were saying, hey, we're going to go conquer this market or do this. It was really driven by the needs of our customers. But that was kind of our first evolution, right? Of being, a solopreneur to turning into a real company at the time. I look back and try to think sometimes of like, what was our secret sauce? What was a pivotal moment? Because Mark, I know you've asked me to do a podcast before, but sometimes I think and I'm like, what were we doing that was really special versus anyone else? But clearly we were, winning these awards.
This is the thing. Exactly. So for you, you're living it every day. So you don't necessarily have the opportunity to step back and go like, what has made us really special? It's a little bit like when you're maybe you have a family get together and your relatives notice how much taller your son is, right?
Yep.
And because you're with him every day, you don't even notice how much he's grown. So sometimes you have to have that distance or that different perspective to really realize how many of the right things that we're doing. So of course, you're saying we grew because of client demand, but not many recruiting firms get on the Inc. 5000 list 6 years in a row. So I think there is more to it than that. And I'd love to dig in to, what some of those reasons would be. So, one way that we could frame it is if you were mentoring a business owner who wanted to achieve, a similar trajectory to what you have, Betsy, and they were maybe a small boutique with a handful of people and they wanted to build something, more sizable. What guidance would you give them?
Fast forward to where we are now, and we've put a lot of differentiators, on paper, and our customers have given us great feedback. So, our customers have said to us our commitment to quality, and I always say when I'm sitting in front of a customer or when I'm sitting in front of our teams, we need to be an extension and a partner. I think the word partner is really overused these days, but if we're just a vendor, if we're someone that they're just going to push job orders and recs out to, and we're just going to throw some paper up against it and see what sticks, that's not for us. So it's really, one, we had to plant our flag early in the process as we grew year three, four, and beyond, of we're a firm committed to quality over quantity, first and foremost, and to operating as extensions of our customers. Now, we're fortunate now. We've got several Fortune 500 customers, and we have some pretty amazing things that we've helped them do. But I think that's why we've been able to achieve that, because we're still operating with that mentality of quality first, even at scale.
Can I ask you a question about that? Because, and we'll circle back to other differentiators and your kind of the DNA at Tier 4. I agree with you 100%, like quality over quantity. On the other hand, I would say that most firms, well, let's put it this way. Everyone's going to say that we are about quality, right? And I believe that, I mean, there's some bad recruiters out there who maybe give us a bad name, but I believe that most people want to do a high quality job, right? So I think commitment to quality is a prerequisite for success, let's say, but it doesn't explain why you have outpaced so many other firms who are also committed to quality. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And to your point, I think it's what a lot of people say, but they don't have the processes, the methodologies, the experience level of their team to back it up. So we also made a kind of another stamp in the ground, if you will. We were not going to hire straight out of college. That's how I started. It clearly was a great path for me, but most firms, you're hiring 30, 40 people in a class and hoping that you're going to get one or two that really sticks and becomes a top performer. I mean, you hope for more, but that's probably what you're going to get. And so our average team member, it's varied over the years, but right now, looking back, it's about 15 years of experience. And that comes with 15 years of knowing what quality is and isn't, of measurable results, of being able to follow those in-depth processes. And candidly, it's not, I learned a heck of a lot along the way in my first 3 to 5 years. I also had to learn I was committed to our industry or not. And by us saying, you know, kind of our minimum to even hire into Tier 4 is that 5-year mark, we were building a team of people that were high performers, but coming together under the umbrella of Tier 4 to take a lot of the good that we love from other places, but try to also keep out a lot of the bad, meetings for meetings sake, KPIs for KPIs sake. So it's really been a focus on the process behind that, the right KPIs, the right people. And I think that's been a bit of a secret sauce of you know, how to quantify that quality piece, because it is hard to quantify, but how we've been able to outperform and you know, have customer relationships. We've also gone back now and started measuring things like NPS and quality of candidate experience, quality of client experience. We use a third-party platform for that. And we are averaging, it changes obviously over quarters, but between a 96 and a 98 NPS.
Wow, that's crazy.
It is. Our platform tells us that the average for recruiting firms is in the 20s, and a good quality recruiting firm is in the 50s. It's 52%. So it's also measuring that and then hearing that feedback and taking that and making it actionable. So I hope that'll do a little bit of explanation of kind of, yes, you're right. Everybody says quality first, but it's another thing to live it and to breathe it and to be willing to walk away from business that isn't going to put you in a position to a large VMS with 30 firms submitting through a system is not going to put you in a position to be a quality firm. It's not how the structure is built. And so it's having the people that are also understanding that you're going to walk away from some business, even though you want to feed your family. And it's hard to say no sometimes, but we've got to decide what's for Tier 4 and what's not for Tier 4 so that we can deliver it with quality.
Okay. Great answer, Betsy. And now I feel like we're really getting going because...
thanks for pulling it out of me, Mark.
Yeah. Because this is the thing. The question is how do you measure, how do you know that you're achieving the quality that you aspire to? And then also, what is the process that sits behind that, that, you know, ensures that that quality is, you know, your standards are achieved consistently? And so you've already alluded to some of these, and I'd love to just dig into them a little bit. The right people is a key part, and we're going to circle back to that. I'm curious to know what the right KPIs are. But focusing on quality, you mentioned processes that ensure quality, and then the fact you're measuring. So NPS, for those just in case you don't know, stands for Net Promoter Score. So typically the question that is asked in that style of a survey is, you know, how likely would you be to recommend to your four group, to colleagues, friends, et cetera, on a scale of 1 to 10? And so people answer that question, and then that's compared to, you know, the norm in the industry, which, as you alluded to, is not particularly high in our industry, unfortunately. But 96 to 98%, I don't think I've ever seen any firm in any business get that high. That's incredible. How many data points make up that statistic?
At this point, over 1,000.
Wow, Betsy, yes. That's amazing.
Yes.
Great job. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Prior to using a platform that we use now, which is sending that out, our recruiters and our team can send that out when they've worked with a candidate. It's on their profile. It's on our website where you can leave a review and share your experience. But I would say prior to having that platform, you know, we were measuring that organically. And I don't think people do that enough. When's the last time that you actually sat down with a client and said, give me two things that we're doing really well, but give me two things that we're not doing well and that we can improve on? Give me two things that your other vendors across staffing services otherwise that you really love about working with them. We are hoping that this feedback loop and this culture of curiosity and accountability at the same time is bleeding across all of our teams. So sales is doing the same thing internally with recruiting that we're doing externally with clients and candidates. And putting your ego aside and being open to that feedback, because it's the only way you're going to grow versus, oh, this client stopped calling me back. Well, were you asking for their feedback along the way? And were you open to hearing and adjusting what the results were of that feedback? So that's been a key point as we've, to your point, put the right people on the bus, and the people aspect is so huge in our industry. And unfortunately, painfully having to exit some people that weren't right for that bus and that couldn't maintain that quality of standard that we wanted to have here.
Yep, absolutely. So I love it's great to have a platform that facilitates, you know, collecting that feedback. But just even asking clients and candidates those questions, I think is extremely powerful. And I love the questions like asking, what do we do well and where can we improve? And also, what do you like about other vendors and partners that you're working with? Those are awesome questions. So first of all, do you mind sharing the platform that you're using?
Absolutely. It's called Great Recruiters. And we were introduced to them a couple of years ago at a conference. Adam Conrad is the founder. It's a wonderful platform. And I'd highly, you know, encourage anyone to take a look at it. And it'll also translate those, that NPS and work on Google reviews as well for your organization. So I think our Google reviews were 4.8 last I received from my marketing team, 4.8 out of 5.
That's very high considering it's easier to get high reviews from clients than it is to candidates. And because not everyone's going to get the job, right? Or not everyone's going to. So there's the chance for dissatisfaction with candidates is higher. And so to have kept such a high Google review rate among, you know, so many placements over many years is a great achievement. What the quality of candidate experience, the quality of client experience, at what point does that get measured? And is it like at the end of the engagement, or is it at points along the way? What's the mechanism there?
Both.
Okay.
Both. So with that platform, it could be points along the way. Someone can proactively take, you know, the opportunity to click on the link in the recruiter or, you know, the person's signature. They can do it via our website. But then they're also sent something after the fact as well.
Okay. Fantastic. All right. So what other processes have you built up over the years to ensure the quality?
We have also incorporated a lot of AI and technology into our process. I'll be honest, we're going through a major tech transformation right now. So that's what I've been spending my days on lately. We go live on a whole front, middle, and back office and a host of other things in February with tons of integration points along the way that's going to change, you know, how we do business going forward. But technology's been a good piece of that. And I don't mean just technical testing, but we've got some platforms built in where we're able to have adaptive conversations with a non-technical recruiter interviewing a technical candidate. And then we can share those responses with our clients. We can build custom screens with our clients as well, based on their tech stack, given we're in the tech space. And that's really helped along the way to ensure our quality. And then we also have some platforms that we've built in that help us with, you know, in our space and technology, the fake candidate thing is a big concern, especially especially for clients. You know, we service financial services and insurance, and just the compliance piece of, you know, potentially having a candidate who poses as someone in the U.S. but isn't a real candidate and is shipping their, you know, their work offshore. So we've put some parameters and some technologies in place that are helping us with that. We're video first whenever possible versus relying on the phone and in person where we can, but you know, definitely video first and you know, making sure that we have multiple touch points with both sales account management before someone hits our client's inbox. We also focus very much on our write-ups to our clients. I've been on the receiving end helping some corporate clients in the past of submittals, and some are so terrible. It's literally just like three bullets and a copy paste of some buzzwords on the resume. To me, our summaries should be well-crafted enough that our client does not need to open the resume. We're going to tell you why we think that person's important. We're not just going to tell you that they have 10 years of Java or, you know, they've been an infrastructure engineer for X amount of time. I want to tell you the projects they worked on, the role they had in those projects, what it accomplished for the business. And those are that's the type of, going back to the quality piece though, but that's the type of quality that we want to present every single time to our clients. And when we onboard a new recruiter, by the way, and a new salesperson, even though I'm not the one solely leading their onboarding, I personally lead that section of the training because it is so important to me that the quality that we first started with is committed to as we continue to scale.
Okay, fantastic. And I love that there's standards, there's company standards that in terms of quality of what we expect, and that you are personally driving those to make sure that they, you know, that they continue as you grow. So that's amazing. I'd love to learn more about the technology side of things, because I know that one of your things that you mentioned on your website and in some of your videos is recruitment automation, but with a personalized approach. Could you explain more about what that means and how you achieve it?
Yes, and that will be a piece of our transformation moving forward, is given the size that we've grown to now, I do see some gaps in keeping with that touch that myself and my COO, Rob, are not okay with. So technology can help us drive some of those gaps. I mentioned AI. We've been incorporating that for a very long time into our sourcing process, which helps speed the candidate's time to talk to a human and to get reviewed and to get feedback. I mentioned the adaptive kind of technology screening as one of those pieces. So it's not relying solely on technology to drive the candidate through their journey, but it's relying on technology to speed and automate the pieces of the process that will get them to a human faster, who can then tell their story to our client and make them known and kind of get them to the top of the pile, so to speak. So that's our combination and our approach.
I love this. And I'd like to dig into that a little more again, Betsy. So I like the idea of leveraging AI and automation technology to speed, to get them to a human faster. But what does that really mean? Like, could you be a little more specific in terms of how, like, what are the points where automation does make sense and where it actually is the right place to use it? And what are the points where it still really has to be a human that that does that part of the process?
Yeah. So a real life example recently that our team was discussing in a meeting was our QA openings for software quality assurance. We're getting 600 to 800 applicants. Wow. Within our first week, if not within our first few days of opening a role. Think about the amount of hours and the amount of time that it would take for a human to review, even though we've got some, you know, keyword matching and sorting and things like that. So that's where AI really does a great job of coming into our process to help us review, automate next steps, automate the feedback loop and the feedback process so that our recruiters can focus fastest on the candidates that are most qualified for the role, but also maintain touch points with others that may not be a fit for that role, but we want to keep in touch with and keep the open lines of communication with moving forward. So the first piece of that process is really key. And then as we move forward in our tech journey, we want to use automation a lot more throughout the onboarding process and remove some of the manual pieces there that kind of slow down the onboarding. And really work with, you know, tight integrations with automations to help onboard them faster to Tier 4 and for our clients. So those are some ways, you know, we're using it on the recruiting side of the house, incorporating it some on the sales process with very personalized messaging, personalized emails, but also using some intent data and some other AI engines, if you will, to help us guide our sales team to the right targets and to narrow down and to be a bit more focused than to just kind of spray and pray, right? That old approach or the, you know, the emails we all receive that you're like, why the hell did I get that email? You know, did they even look at my profile? How did I get into this automation, you know, bucket, right? So
yeah,
it's a bit of a dangerous slope when you start putting it so much into your process. So we want to lean in fast because we do feel like at our space, our size, this is where I think that other mid-market firms that are listening to this, Mark, and I hope they'll take away is you can steer a small sailboat or a small motorboat a heck of a lot faster than you could steer a cargo ship or a cruise ship. And so this is where those of us in our space can really adopt and adapt and automate and lean into these new technologies and AI way faster than some of our larger competitors out there that are going to have to take, you know, a much longer time to get something rolled out, or the cost is prohibitive for them at this time. So we're trying very hard in our new transformation and as we move into 2025 to really win the speed to market there and do some really innovative and creative things around digital recruiters and a digital employee, so to speak, that will help us continue to touch more candidates and more clients faster and more efficient, but still have, again, our human and quality touch there.
Love that. That's cool. What do you mean when you say a digital employee?
Yeah, that's what they're calling it now, but actually a digital recruiter that is calling people and chatting and, you know, has their own identity on your team and helps you to get through those screens, get through those 800-ish candidates, right, that I mentioned on that QA opening. More than just like a typical chatbot or email, but an actual live voice and digital employee that that's going to call and have a conversation with them.
Wow, cool. And how, this is a bit of a tangent. Let's see where it goes, because I have played around with some of the AI kind of conversational AI tools that are available commercially, like AIR.ai, I think is one of them. And they are, it feels like they're close, but like not quite there yet. Like there seems to be too much margin for them to mess up and for it to go wrong. How do you feel like, and I'm sure we're not, you know, it's not going to be long before they're like even 10 times better than they are now, but what's your thoughts on, like, how comfortable are you letting an AI recruiter screen candidates, number one? And number two, how ready do you think the market is? Like, are candidates happy to talk to an AI recruiter?
Your questions are exactly my first thought, was how can a company like Tier 4, who focuses so much on quality and process and partnership, potentially lose that quality, right, with going this route? But I agree with you. Some tools are not there yet. They're more if-then scenarios versus being able to have a real live conversation. We have two that we are close to signing before end of the year. We'll pick one of the two, but that are much further along than some of the others we've seen and that we've demoed. And that's been my question to those tools, right? Is what tell me about the quality of what are you measuring? And at least one of them that we're talking with has been, they send surveys just like we're doing on the NPS side. And they've been able to maintain in the 90s. I think there's a couple of, we're going to watch this very closely. We're going to monitor the quality. But the counterpoint is, what's one of the number one complaints people have about our industry in working with people and staffing? It's the ghosting.
They don't hear back. Exactly.
Right? They never hear back. So would you rather hear something, even if it's from a digital recruiter, right? Would you rather hear something and move along in the process than hear nothing? And this is where I have to lean into the fact of, if I put myself in the candidate's shoes, I'd rather hear something and move forward. And then our recruiters will take over in communication, but it's going to help us get you to the finish line faster and be more
so much faster,
like, so much faster, right? And it's not just the one way, you know, video interviews that came about, you know, a decade ago. It's unreal. And then I think the other piece to bake into this is, some will be more comfortable than others, but we have this flood of Gen Z into the markets and into the world of work. And they would prefer to operate this way, and they would prefer to have this conversation. The other convenience is, your recruiters are probably only working, you know, 8:30 to 5:30. They're working business hours in their time zone, whereas your digital employee can work 24 hours a day, and the candidate can have these conversations at their convenience, on their timeline, over their lunch break, at 9 o'clock at night, if they want to. And again, I have to lean into the fact that I was so skeptical about this, and I will give full credit to our COO, Rob, who has really leaned into this and really believed. And the more he's attended conferences and, you know, talked to so many providers, I mean, he's all in on this, and he's gotten me excited and all in on this. But I have to lean into the fact that people would rather be contacted and know they're moving forward in the process and know they're being considered and know where they stand than put a resume into a black hole and be another statistic of a firm that totally ghosts you.
It's a very, very good point, Betsy. And look, here's my take on it. And what I love about what you guys are doing is this is the way the world is going, right? This is happening. And so, you know, you can either embrace it and then be at the forefront of actually, you know, innovating and pushing those boundaries and figuring out how to best apply this so that it actually increases people's, the candidate experience, the client experience, or you can sit back and say, no, it's not going to work. And, you know, or I don't like the fact that people are talking to an AI or whatever, and, you know, then get left so far behind that you will never, ever catch up. So I love the fact that you guys are absolutely going for it. You're committing.
We're committed.
You know, time, energy, resources to this. And you're figuring it out. And that means that you're gaining a massive competitive advantage, which ultimately is good for your team as well as for your clients and candidates. So
make no mistake, this is an investment. This technology is expensive. There's all kinds of freemiums out there, but you're not going to get the level of engagement that you need. So this is a big investment, especially for a company of our size. How many of us already feel like our head spins every day hearing about AI and ChatGPT and the next thing and, you know, generative AI and all these large language models and how we can incorporate those things into our business. And we hear it from our customers, right? Those of us in the tech side, and not even in the tech side, it's in every bit of the business, you know, financials, legal. It's to your point, it's, you can either be on the forefront or if you don't start tomorrow, you're already left behind. And we are committed to being on the forefront. We're committed to doing it carefully and measuring it and not doing it recklessly. But this is where we, because we're not some massive cargo ship, we're going to be this nimble motorboat going through the water, and we're going to use this opportunity to springboard ahead and hopefully years ahead of some of our competition by embracing this.
That is awesome, Betsy. Are you happy talking tech stack? Like what tools you guys use? What that looks like?
Some, yes.
Okay.
I will tell you, so we are moving away from Luxo, and we feel like we've outgrown it. And we are very much wanting to embrace technology that embraces integrations and playing friendly with APIs and you know, building integrations with partners into their environment. So we are moving to Tracker. That's our new platform of choice for our, you know, front middle office that we're going to connect to. And then we have a number of different things that we're layering on top of that. So some of those tools are, we are, as I mentioned, kind of a top two, and we're making decisions moving forward from there. But we're talking seriously to Cloud Call from the, you know, text and voice side. We have an AI note taker that we embraced about a year ago that has been a massive gain for our team in having conversations with clients and candidates and being able to have transcriptions, but also crafting summaries and, you know, next steps and making sure that also our team can go back. And if someone, you know, let's say the recruiter we assigned who was on that call is out on vacation the next week and someone else has to pick up the job, well, you're not playing telephone like we've all done for years past, right? You have everything there with the notes. So, you know, those AI note taker and summarization tools and personal assistant tools are ones we've leaned into. I mentioned great recruiters. And then we're going to have a lot of other things built into our stack that we don't have today in terms of integrating with those VMSs and auto-creating job orders into our system, so that takes away the manual work that our team is doing now. And then those will actually update. And then we're finalizing a couple of different platforms, one of which would not only help us with contact information into our system, but to also auto update that contact information. So you're keeping your data refreshed inside of your ATS. So we're putting those pieces together now, and this has been a very long journey. It's been about an 18-month journey that we're coming, to the end of. But, we're sharing with our team, and then eventually, with our customers, because this will affect how people interact, timesheets and other things. But we're sharing with our team. This is what is going to give us the foundation. Again, another significant investment. It's almost, our new tech stack is almost double the cost of our current tech stack when you put all the pieces together, but a significant investment in giving our people the right tools. And we hope that'll be a competitive advantage as we move forward, right? Of attracting new talent, but giving our people the right tools in this modern age to scale and to make sure we're getting this right so that we can grow to 50 million, 100 million in our journey and be equipped to do that from a tools perspective.
I love that. That's awesome. Can I double click on the note taker? Because I feel like that's a low hanging fruit that everybody listening, if you're not already on that, then that is such an easy way to start working with AI. Do you mind sharing who you've chosen for that?
We haven't chosen yet, but I would encourage people to look at Otter AI, Fathom AI, Fireflies. Even, for those that are working on Teams, you have Copilot. I don't think they're as far along as I would like them to be, given they're from Microsoft. But sorry to my Microsoft friends that might listen to this. But that is absolutely a low-hanging fruit that if people aren't using that, and even if you use the free versions of those, there's a ton of power in the paid enterprise version. But if you're a smaller shop, even using the free version of those will get you so much further in terms of productivity. And I mean, who likes to manually write up notes? How many salespeople are so great at putting their notes from a client meeting into the CRM?
Absolutely. That's huge because salespeople do not like admin, right?
No, so... no. And I am one, right? So my team calls me out very politely that I'm the worst at it, right? But I will say, like, even people on our team that I would say are our biggest fighters, right? Did not embrace, the ATS, which, we're correcting that behavior, but even they've embraced this because they see how much time it saves them. But they also see that it's not just about putting the notes, it's about being the great partner to your internal recruiting team, your internal management staff, but also a great partner to your clients because you have everything. Those that don't embrace a CRM from a sales perspective, and I'm going to be a soapbox for a minute, but you are doing yourself such a disservice to your relationships with clients and customers by not embracing the organization of a CRM and keeping up-to-date notes and records that you can get through all of the conversations that you have. So, and for those that are in not an Otter AI or not a, note taker, but, for those that are much more in person, I would encourage getting one of those notepads. Remarkable is one, but one of the notepads where your physical notes, even on an iPhone, you can do this, but your physical notes can be transcribed and uploaded into Teams or Google or whatever it may be, and then ultimately into your ATS if there's not a direct integration. But again, why are we out there taking manual notes and making this difficult for us in 2024? It's silly. It's silly.
Betsy, we're going to shift gears and talk about culture and the success you've had at building an awesome team at Tier 4. Before we do, and in fact, this is the segue. So you mentioned Fathom, Otter, and so on. We're using Fireflies at the moment. We're thinking of moving to Fathom because I think the AI notes are better from what I've looked at both. There's one that a lot of our clients are using called Quill, which is specific to the recruiting industry. Might be worth looking at. But the use case that some of our clients who have team members, recruiters, salespeople are using is for coaching. Because what they're doing is the call recordings and the transcriptions, they're then getting analyzed by ChatGPT and like I think what you could do, I don't think they've done this yet, but you could even create your own custom GPT, which is a sales coach, for example, to analyze the call transcripts and give feedback on how they could improve their performance on those recruiting calls or those business development calls. And that's not instead of the leader listening to calls or as a team reviewing calls and looking for ways we can improve and also capturing the golden nuggets, the calls that or the parts of calls that were really, really good that we can use to learn from and replicate that success. But the thing that stops managers from doing that call recording analysis is time, right? It's like listening, having to listen to like hours and hours of calls. Most people don't have time, so they just don't do it at all. What about let AI be a sales coach for your team members and analyze how we can improve?
I'd love to add a couple points there. And I have heard great things about Quill as well. And I think Woo is maybe the other one, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember if that's, I'm so in technology overload right now, Mark. That might be a contact finder, but no, it's Gong. Gong is the one.
Gong. Gong. Yes. Yep.
But I've heard great things about Quill, and Fireflies is another one that we are looking at as well. So we should chat offline. But yeah, to your point there, that's a great use case, the coaching. But also I would encourage for those that have remote teams like us. So we have a big team here in Atlanta, but we have teams at 7 markets across the U.S. now, all who are remote. And so that is a big key because I can attend meetings with them and others can attend meetings and listen, but we can't be there for all of the meetings, to your point, and we can't be there always in person. So at least for those virtual ones, we can absolutely provide coaching. And my wife is a vice president of client engagement for a software company, and she manages and leads a lot of their technology platforms. And she brought Fathom into their environment as well. And one of the neat things, not only for the coaching aspect of it, is they've got the paid, you know, enterprise edition that can analyze all of the notes. It's also, oh, well, our clients want this or this product feature. And so to your point, it's the conversations and looking at trends, because they could say, actually, you know, you bring that up, Mark, but when we analyze all of our notes from all of our meetings across the enterprise, a client hasn't asked for that once, you know, or they have only asked for that once. It shouldn't be a priority. So, you know, having the access to those conversations and to that just vast amount of data and the ability to layer technology on top of that to make key business decisions and to coach the team and all the other pieces, it's critical. So if you're a sales manager or a leader of an organization, again, like low-hanging fruit that isn't a lot of time, that technology can really be an enabler for you as you move forward.
I didn't come into this even realizing we were going to talk about technology and AI.
I know. I love it though.
So what I was originally going to ask you, and which I still want to do in the time we have left, is you've built, like, you've won all these awards, Betsy, as a leader, but you've really built an awesome team of 30-ish people. What do you feel has been the key to creating a culture that people, you know, and you've also got, you know, that tenure of experienced people. What are some of the lessons there that have enabled you to get traction?
Yeah. And I'll say, first of all, we welcome all ideas. It doesn't matter if you are someone who's been on our team for 1 week or someone who's been on our team for 1 year, or you've been our first employee who's been here 10 years. Everybody brings unique and different perspectives. And I would say we are much more collaborative in our decision-making. I've been told by some members of our team, like, you know, they've been other places where everything is made behind closed doors and do it this way because I said so. And we're really a consensus culture. Obviously, we will have the final say-so, but we want to bring all opinions into that fold when making decisions. And then we also communicate to, at the best of our ability, the why behind a lot of our decisions that we're making. But that's been a journey. I'll be very honest. You know, sometimes I'd say probably early on, I was guilty of, because I hired an experienced person, not coming from, you know, someone you're having to like train and micromanage. Maybe I would be guilty of being too hands-off with that person or not putting enough structure in place for them or making the wrong assumption that just because someone was successful at ABC company, they would be successful here because they're just going to go out and do the same things they were doing. I was very guilty of that. But I also had to own that as my evolution of a leader. And I had to own that in front of our team and say, hey, look, past is in the past, but here's, you know, iteration two of what we're moving forward with. And here's the why, and here's the greater big, you know, bigger picture for the team. So we're also working on a culture of, you know, peer accountability. So, you know, whether it is coaching, you know, you mentioned the Fathom calls. I want my team to listen to other Fathom calls without me there and coach each other. Like that's the gold standard, right? Is you've got people coaching each other. And that is a process, and it is not something that happens overnight. And you can say it all day, but it's, are you living that and breathing that? So we're really leaning into that's been a part of our culture, but really leaning into that. Both Rob and I as leaders, he manages the delivery teams, I manage the sales teams and operations. But if someone brings something up to us, our first question is, did you speak directly with that person? If the answer is no, unless it's, you know, a critical HR issue, but if the answer is no, we will not address the issue. Why should I get involved if you can't have a peer-to-peer conversation in a respectful manner? Because no one gets up every single day and says, I want to do a really crappy job today. I mean, some people, I guess, do if they've, you know, they, if their heart's not in it or whatnot, but that comes across in other ways. But nobody gets up and says, like, I want to do a really terrible job today for my clients or for my staff. And I'll say, you were instrumental in coaching early on, and I have not had another coach until recently. We've brought in Casey J. Cox. I'm not sure if you know him, but he's a former K-Forcer, and now he's a coach, not only for the staffing industry, he does a lot of other industries, but, you know, we've invested a lot of time in each other, and we've invested a lot of time with Casey and with some third-party coaching, because it makes us all better. If we're not all trying to be better, you know, the best coaches I know, I'm a Georgia fan, diehard Georgia fan, so Kirby Smart, right? People respect Kirby Smart, but he's tough. He's going to tell you like it is. And those people, those true athletes, the elite players, they want to be coached and they're going to take action on it. And then there's others that say they want to get coached, but they don't take the action on it. And those are not the players that we need on our team long term. So we have to be really clear about that as we continue to move forward. And sometimes we haven't been. And so again, it's a process of iteration. And you know, are you going to get up every single day and be better than you were the next day? And are you going to take action to do the tough things or to have the hard conversations or to go the extra mile to bring your team along, or are you not? And that's kind of the culture we are aiming to build here. It's harder as you scale to keep those things going, right? But you have to be intentional about it, and you have to. To me, the best leaders I've ever been around are the ones that have a very high EQ, and I hope to aspire to continue to work on myself. And I expect the same from my team, though. I expect from my team every single thing that I do and that I pour into it.
Absolutely, Betsy. We could go for another hour. I feel like we've only gotten going. So promise me you'll come back and do a part two sometime, maybe in person or over Teams or Zoom.
I would love to. Be honored to.
Fantastic. Is there anything that we didn't discuss today that you just want to make sure that we get covered on this first session?
Yeah, no, I this has been great. And again, we didn't know it would take this technology turn, but I love it. And it's an important topic right now. But I would say for anybody that might be listening to this, you know, one, Mark is a fantastic coach. So if you are looking for a great partner to help your business grow, I cannot recommend him highly enough. But two, if you've listened to this and you've thought, oh, Tier 4 might be a place that was not on my radar that I might want to check out, we are expanding our team in Central Florida on the sales and sales side. We are looking for a few additional team members as well in Northern Virginia and DC, where we have a group of clients, but we don't necessarily have someone boots on the ground right now. And we want that in 2025. And then we're continuing to expand in Texas and in the Midwest. So Chicago market is one for us that, again, we have recruiting talent there. We have some clients there, but we don't have a boots on the ground. We had someone move out of that market to go to another market in Texas. So we're looking for someone with, you know, 5 to 7 years of sales background, top performer, who wants to come in and, you know, hopefully embrace diversity as a diverse supplier and, you know, go and be a part of a really fun growth trajectory that you may not get when you go to a large firm that you're just a plug and play player. So if any of that resonates, I'd love to just leave with the message that we're hiring new team members and excited for our growth over the next 3 years.
I'm excited too, Betsy. So definitely if that is you, then reach out to Betsy Robinson. Follow her on LinkedIn anyway, because it's always exciting to see what Tier 4 Group are getting up to. And Betsy, thank you again. That was awesome.
Thanks, Mark. I really appreciate it.